And a very good morning to you. It is 10 past 10 on this Tuesday, the 11th of July. Nice to have your company on the Sean Doherty Show. We have an action-packed show for you today with so much to get through. And we're looking forward to your calls and comments on the programme too. So phone us on 07491 25000. You can text us on 086 60 25000. Remember, you can also find us at Sean Doherty Show on Facebook. But first up this morning, the young man who saved a girl in a house fire has said that he thanks God that he left his bedroom window open, because if he hadn't, he wouldn't have noticed the child screaming, and he wouldn't have smelt the smoke. And in fact, there could have been a bigger problem than there turned out to be, because there were two houses here. It's a semi-detached property. But Daniel O'Kane's in studio with us this morning. Daniel, good morning, first of all.
Good morning, Sean.
I was talking about yesterday to the fire officer, because we just heard news of this awful fire, and he mentioned this hero on the ladder, and that's you. So, Daniel, take us through exactly what happened. It was yesterday morning at about, was it 5 to 1?
It was around between 12:30 and 1, around that time. Well, we were just got our baby settled off to sleep, and we're just going to sleep ourselves. We're lucky, you know, we had the window open. It was such a warm night. The next thing, we heard screaming from outside, and we both went to the window, and we could smell smoke. At that point, we says, right, get the wains up, get them dressed, get them out. And we went downstairs.
What was going through your mind at this point?
To be honest, I had no idea what was going through my mind at that point. You know, it was, I don't know, to be honest. You know,
something just told you, get out of the house with your own kids.
Yeah. And got outside, saw the wee girl from the window. She was calling for help.
From the upstairs window next door?
Yeah. She was out the window, you know, calling for help, help. We rang the emergency services.
What did you actually see at that point?
She was at the ledge of the window with her head out of it, and she was just screaming out, you know, can somebody help? Can somebody help?
And do you know the girl?
Oh, I know her now. She never was there now. And
but she knew it was you, and she was shouting, help, help.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is a situation you'd never faced before, and it's very scary. She's only about terrifying. 10 years of age, isn't she?
Yeah, she's around 10 years old.
Yeah. So you're looking up at her, she's on the ledge, and she's screaming for help, and you're calling the emergency services first. What happens then?
I hand the phone to my girlfriend, and I ran up to the house, grabbed a wee stepladder, extended it out as far as it could go, climbed up it. I told her, right, grab onto me as tight as you can. Mm. And she grabbed on to me, and we kind of shuffled down the ladder, got her down.
Well, that's no mean feat. I mean, that had to be quite a difficult manoeuvre.
It was tricky. Very tricky.
I mean, you're not the biggest of fellas,
leave it vertically challenged.
No, you're slight. So you going up those stairs and then having this 10-year-old who's, you know, not a baby.
Yeah.
And you had to somehow get her down the ladder.
Yeah. The only way I could think was wrap your arms around my shoulders. Just hold me as tight as you can, because I needed my hands to, you know, grab the ledge, and, you know, luckily there was a wee satellite dish beside it, and I got my hand to that, and I managed then to get, you know, down to the steps of the ladder, and that stage I got her down, not so bad. After that, I ran up the ladder again, and we had neighbours, then they started to appear, they got the wee girl, you know, away safely, no credit to them as well. I went up, tried to get in, I got my head in the window, but the smoke was just coming out like nothing else. It was just, you know, burns your eyes, you couldn't breathe, you couldn't see nothing, it was just pitch black.
In the bedroom?
In the bedroom, yeah.
And at that point you were being fought back by the terrible fumes and the the smoke and smell, but you could hear a noise.
Yeah, I could hear her father. I could hear him calling. I couldn't make out. I couldn't make out where he was. I couldn't see him, but I'd hear him calling. So I said, you know, if you can, follow my voice, you know, come to me. Or get as low to the ground as you possibly can. You know, stay low as you can. Last stage, I couldn't see. I wasn't able to get to him or reach him at that stage. I got down. I got back on the phone to emergency services. They were... I was basically giving them directions. At that stage, we had another neighbour. He climbed up the ladder. And he was calling out to him. And that stage, the father, he got to the window then by that stage. And your man was holding him there, trying to get him out. But by that stage then, the emergency services, fire brigade, they landed then. And they took over from there. And, you know, great job they've done. You know, they got him out, you know, as quick as anything, you know, seen to them.
They went in the front door.
Yeah.
And upstairs with the breathing apparatus.
Yeah.
And they, did they bring him out through the front door?
Yeah.
And how was he when he was coming out?
At that stage, I only caught a glimpse of him, but it was on the oxygen mask, and they had him on a stretcher, so they did.
Was he conscious?
I'm not too sure. I think he was. Now, I was standing back a wee bit at that stage, like I couldn't see much. I can only caught a glimpse of him, but he seemed conscious at the time, anyway.
And the little girl, where was she?
I think she was taken down to a neighbour's house, and I think she was brought up back then up to the ambulance when the ambulance arrived, and they took care of her there.
Mm. So there's another neighbour involved here who also assisted and tried to help and went up the ladder,
yeah.
But again fought back by the fumes.
Yeah.
And because we were speaking to the fire officer yesterday, and they were saying that the father had tried to get out onto the ledge but had fallen back in.
Yeah.
But there's a bit of confusion about that, obviously, because it was all...
Oh, everything was just, you know, intoxications with a smoke, you know, going through you. You know, everything been, you know, rushing around, you know, so much going on at the one time.
When you came down the ladder after you'd been up, obviously you'd rescued the young girl at this stage, but when you went back up the ladder and tried to help the father, and you could hear him, but you couldn't see him, and you were fought back then by the fumes.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no possibility of going into that room.
Not a hope you were getting in there. The smoke actually seemed to be getting, you know, darker and heavier. You know, it was scary handlings of those.
This is Daniel O'Kane from Newton Cunningham, who originally from Rafoe, I think, aren't you, Daniel?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, living in Newton Cunningham, and alongside his girlfriend and your child, is it one child you have in the house?
Two.
And you were all in bed at this stage,
yeah.
Of course. It was 1 o'clock nearly in the morning, and you hear this child screaming. You knew instinctively there was something wrong,
yeah.
When you hear a child at that time of the morning,
yeah.
And it sounded like terror.
That did,
yeah. And that's what alerted you. You got up, you looked out, you saw the
You could smell the smoke.
Yeah. Did you sort of instinctively know this is the next door neighbour's house and this is going to be our house? Or
yeah. Well, as soon as I smelled smoke, I was like, get the winds out.
Mm.
You know. And then just rush out to see what was going on when you heard the screams from the wee girl.
And you had a ladder handy, which was...
Yeah.
Now, some people have thought you were a painter. You're not a painter.
No, I'm actually a barber.
You're a barber?
I'm a barber.
And you need a ladder for that, don't you?
Well, of course.
Handy for that. So you're a barber, but you had a ladder handy?
Yeah, I did.
That was just luck?
That was just luck.
You know.
Very lucky.
Because you couldn't have really done anything without that ladder.
Without, you know, it was just a wee step ladder, you know. And if it wasn't there, you know, I don't know how long it would have taken, you know, maybe to get another one from somewhere.
And I presume your children are pretty young, aren't they?
Yes, 7 years old and 8 weeks old.
And what was 7-year-old and your girlfriend saying, were they saying, you know, be careful, don't go up? Or?
Yeah, we got away. She didn't know what was going on. No. We were just like, get up, get out as quick as you can. Got them over to the neighbor's house. They were really helpful as well. You know, got them into the house. Didn't know what was going on at the time.
Mm. But I'm sure for your girlfriend it was terrifying because you've gone up this ladder and she didn't know what was going to happen. You know? And it can be so dangerous that you know, blowouts, anything could happen, you know?
Yeah.
So the window, was the window was obviously open. She managed to get a window open, and that was in itself sometimes those windows. It could be a small window upstairs, but it was a big window, so they were able to open it. And But whilst the little girl was able to get to the ledge, the father somehow, he wasn't able to get out as quickly as her.
Yeah, I suppose with so much smoke, you know, I couldn't. Yeah. I don't know where he was in the room. You just couldn't. You couldn't see anything.
Pure black.
It was just pure black. It was, you know, surreal how dark that was. You know, you couldn't see anything.
It's remarkable because the smoke can kill in seconds.
Yeah.
And he's very fortunate to be
so lucky. Yeah. You know, really, really lucky.
Yeah. And the fire service, we hear that they arrived from Derry and from Letterkenny eventually.
Yeah, they were there. They were there pretty quick. So they were now, in all fairness to them. You know, credit where credit's due. Them, you know, they were there right away.
And then a couple of ambulances. And
Guardie. And, you know, very fast, you know, to get there now.
So what happened then? I mean, you'd got the girl out, the fire service had got the father out. What were you doing then at that point? Just relief?
I don't know what was going on in my head. Not now, to be fair. Relief at one way, you know, got them out, got our own family out away from it. Just a wee bit of relief, you know, adrenaline is just going through. Hard to explain, really. You know, just relief more so than anything. Everybody was okay.
Well, it's not as if you can just say, right, that's it, we'll go to bed now, you know.
I didn't sleep too well that night, in all fairness.
You know, the adrenaline, the fear afterwards, thinking.
Well, that's it, you know, fear, you know, what could have happened, you know, in all fairness, you know, fair play to that wee girl, you know, credit where credit's due to her. You know, she saved us as much as we saved her. You know, if it wasn't for her, you know, getting to Wanda, you know, calling out, you know, for help, God only knows what could have happened.
Like. Yeah, and you had the foresight to say to the father, stay low.
Yeah.
Because
smoke rises. Yeah. That's just inherited before. You know, it says, you know, if you can't get to the window, stay as low as you can. Mm. You know, try and get to the window if you can. But, you know, try and stay low to the ground.
And does it make you view your house differently now? Has it made you think differently at night?
Oh, it has. You know, just, you know, check fire alarms, you know, so regularly. Have a plan, you know, just have, you know, maybe not one plan, but a couple of plans. You know, just think, you know, what could happen, what, you know, how to escape if anything ever does happen. You know, just be prepared, because we never expected anything like that. You know, we were just ready to go off to sleep, normal night, and next thing, all of a sudden, matter of minutes, basically, all this was going on.
So what's the phone been like since?
I've had a few calls and messages and all coming through to me now.
And a few heroes, I'm sure.
Aye, well, a few coming through now, you know, thanking me and things like that now, but...
And how do you feel now?
To be honest, it's just relief, more so. Everybody's safe. You know, when you're thinking back, you're like, my God, you know, what could have happened? It could have been a lot worse. You're sitting thinking, you know, you really appreciate your family and, you know, everything around you now.
Well, barbers and hairdressers, normally it's, are you going on any holidays or have you had any holidays? You know, the conversations you have with your clients. There'll be some conversations now when you're cutting hair.
Yeah, I'll have a few things to talk about now when I'm cutting so well. But I got a few days off now. I'll go back now and maybe Thursday or Friday now and whenever I get everything sorted out around the house.
And where do you do the cutting?
I work down in Classic Style Barbers. It's on the Port Road. Kind of opposite, you know, AXA Insurance and opposite Burrito Loco, opposite there.
Right. So that, it'll be a busy salon now in the next few weeks. They'll be in to hear the crack. Well, we hope that... I think the little girl, she had a hospital at this point.
Aye, they're out of hospital. They came... actually seen her there yesterday.
And did you chat away?
I was talking to her, and you know, just asking, you know, how is she doing? She was okay, and and her mother was there, and thanking, and I was like, you know, at least everybody's safe now, and you know, she saved us as well, like, you know, and you know, only for her quick thinking, like, you know, yourself, what could happen? You know.
What did she say to you, the little girl?
Oh, she's very shy and quiet now, but she's saying, you know, thanks and all that now.
Yeah, and her mother obviously very, very grateful to you.
Yeah, oh, she was very, very nice woman now. She was thanking me very much. So she was, can't even remember now.
What about the daddy? How's he?
As far as I know, I think he's still in the hospital.
Right.
I haven't seen him yet now, but I think he is still. He could be in for a day or two yet now.
The smoke
inhalation. Oh, you know how he survived that was unbelievable.
Yeah, and the fire apparently was in the kitchen.
I think so. I think it originated in the kitchen from what I heard now. I never got into too much detail with the fire services, but I think it originated in the kitchen.
And was there any other damage to the property, or your property, or was it just smoke?
Well, in my house, you can smell the smoke. It's not too bad, but there is a smell of it, more so up the stairs. Now, I haven't got into, and I haven't seen inside their house now, but as far as I know, it's... pretty damaged pretty badly.
And the kitchen particularly, I think our officer was saying yesterday. But the main thing is, you know, nobody lost their lives, and this could have been a very different story.
No, it could have been.
Well done, Daniel, the hero. And, I mean, you're a modest guy, but I'll tell you, you did a great thing. Well done, thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
Daniel O'Kane there. It's 27 minutes past 10, back after these. Man, Daniel O'Kane there. 0749125000. If you're phoning us today and if you want to text into the programme, it's 0866 20 5000. Irish Water are up next. We've got Lawrence Nash joining us from Irish Water Asset Operations. This is a crucial time when it comes to water preservation, conservation. They're very concerned at Irish Water, and that's why Lawrence is in for a conversation with us this morning. And without even time to hardly sit, I'm going to say good morning, Lawrence. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sean.
Well, Lawrence, we've just come from one very critical situation, obviously, but this is a critical situation of a different nature. This is water, and you say that the water is at a critical level at the moment in Loch Combe. Is that your main concern?
Yeah, we have two sources in Donegal that have got critical water levels. One is called Loch Column or Column Kill in the Milford area, and the other one is called Loch Fad, which is in the East Inishowen area. Both of these raw water sources have got extremely low levels of water compared to the normal cyclical rainfall events, and it's causing us some concern.
Okay, so caused by lack of rainfall?
Basically, the problem that we are facing started in the spring of 2016. We have been experiencing low levels of water based against the average rainfall intensity for years, for the year, which has placed us then with a position that our raw water sources have been dwindling and haven't been able to be topped up because the rain hasn't fallen specifically in Loch Column and Loch Fad.
Over a year, really?
Over a year. We done a presentation on Friday to elected representatives from both the Letterkenny Municipal District and the Inishowen Municipal District. And at those presentations, we explained this is not a problem just unique to Donegal. Irish Water, at a national level, have currently got 41 water supply zones that are showing cause for concern. Two of those happen to be in Donegal.
So two of your national problems are in Donegal, and the two that you've spoken about, one is in the Milford area, and the other is in Inishowen, East yes. Inishowen. Now, quite a lot of people are impacted here.
Yep.
Do you want to go through the areas that are impacted? I know that for Loch Collum or Columkill, Milford, Kerry Keel, Rathmullen and Remelton have been mentioned, and Loch Fad is also critical,
yeah.
And that supplies Quigley's Point, Maville, Redcastle and parts of Greencastle. Is there any other reason, other than lack of rainfall over the year, that could cause this? Has the supply chain changed in any way?
No, just in relation to the two water supply zones, I'll give you some basic data relating to those supply zones. The Milford supply covers the areas you've mentioned, and we have approximately 2,000 domestic connections off those and about 300 non-domestic connections. There's a number of schools in that area, businesses, and we have a number of vulnerable customers. And this area is also subject to tourism. So in the summertime, we will expect an increase. The average flow in the Milford area previous to the drought incident would have been around 2,250 metres cubed per day. Now, in simple terms, that's 2.25 million litres of water a day. We have a leakage or an unaccounted water level of 45%, which is a very, very good percentage. The Irish Water target is 38%.
So, well, what does that mean exactly?
What it means is that for every litre of water we put out into the public, we cannot account for 45% of it. Some of that would be termed leakage. Some would be misuse by customers, taking more than what they should be taking. Some would be associated with illicit connections or unmetered connections. So we're trying, along with the question you've asked, along with the rainfall problem, you could say that leakage is not helping us as well, and we are actively pursuing leaks, and that's one of the reasons why we went public through the previous two media adverts was to ask customers to conserve water in their home, in their businesses, in their schools, and also to report any leaks that they see.
Okay, but I presume, this is Lawrence Nash, by the way, from Irish Water, and I presume that we had leakage 3 years ago and 4 years ago and 5 years ago. I mean, these aren't new problems. These problems have been traditional problems that we've had, if you like. So is there anything different about the wastage at the moment?
In relation to the Milford area, the leakage levels or the unaccounted flow for water is 45%. The target for Irish Water from what they call an economic level of leakage is 38%. The 45% is due to a number of factors also, as I outlined, but it also includes infrastructure. And Irish Water are addressing infrastructure deficits in both the Milford and the East Inishowen area.
That means there are problems that you have to deal with.
Yes.
And how great have those problems become in the last number of years?
Those problems have been there for quite a number of years. Irish Water have identified those, and that was part of the longer-term strategic view that I outlined on Friday to the elected representatives.
Okay, this caller just can't understand where these stats are coming from, because according to RTE Weather, the rainfall levels for the month of June was above average in Donegal. So how is it that we're saying today we have a problem? Now, you said it's only specific areas. Does that mean that the rainfall in those areas was less than in other areas?
Yeah, the data that I refer to is extracted from the Malinhead Meteorological Service, and it refers to the entire period from October 16 right through to June 17. Yes, there was rain in June, we accept that. But also another fact is that April was the driest April that that we experienced for 67 years in this country.
And how long does it take before you're talking? I mean, you're saying it's at a critical level at the moment. I mean, it doesn't come much more serious than that, does it? What's the next stage?
Well, the next stage is I outlined, we put forward two plans. We have a short-term plan and a long-term plan that we demonstrated to the elected representatives. The short-term plan involves both areas of slaying pipework, emergency pipework, to connect up and supply some of these affected areas from adjacent water supply zones that where we don't have a problem.
Okay, so if you do that, will that impact on any other properties in those areas?
It will lessen the demand from the lakes that I've referred to.
Yeah, but if you're taking the supply from somewhere else, does that then impact on people who are receiving their water supply from the other source?
Yes, there may, because we're changing the water supply zone and the source, they may notice a difference in taste in some cases. So that's
people won't like that.
That's the only impact that will have. Yeah, I think it's... We regret having to do this.
When's that going to happen?
Well, we're currently doing that at the minute in Milford. We have extended the Fannad water supply zone further south into the Kerry-Keele area. We have extended the Goldrum supply into the Ballyscanlan Road area. And we have plans to extend Goldrum water from the Bullen Bridge up into the Milford Town area as well. So we're trying to lessen the demand on the source by bringing in these additional areas.
I know that you were on with me before, Lawrence, about this, but are we a bit late, even with the previous ad campaign you did? Aren't we a wee bit late coming to people now and saying it's critical, you know? Shouldn't this have been done a year ago? And why we wouldn't maybe be at the stage where you're having to take water from another source now?
Yep. We monitor on a weekly basis, and in fact on a daily basis now in the current period, the lake levels and the flows from the sources. We don't want to be alarmist by going to the public too early to explain to them the situation, so we were waiting until we instigated our emergency incident team in April of this year, and we have been meeting, Irish Water and Donegal County Council have been meeting on a weekly basis to monitor the situation. So there's a sort of staged process to getting to the worst case scenario, which would be nighttime or daytime restrictions.
How far are we from that?
At the minute, we are approximately 8 weeks away from that type of action.
So if we don't see a dramatic increase in rainfall in the next 8 weeks, we're going to see nighttime and daytime.
Yes.
What? Cutoffs?
Yes.
Of water?
Yeah.
Impacting on these people?
Yes.
That's very serious.
Yes.
We're 8 weeks away.
Yes. And that's the reason why we've gone to the public to ask them to conserve as much water as they can to help us with the problem that we have, and also to report leaks, including internal leaks and any leaks they observe on the roads and footpaths.
Okay, but let's go back here. If we're at that critical level now where we're only 8 weeks away from a very serious crisis in water in these areas where you're going to be switching water off during the night and in the day, that means houses, that means businesses, severely impacted here. And you mentioned businesses as well because, you know, tourism is vital. And hotels, restaurants, they don't want to hear this kind of thing.
Certainly don't. And that's why we're making the public aware of the situation that we face. We, Irish Water, don't want to have to implement these restrictions, but it may become the only option that we have in order to safeguard whatever water we have until the rain does come. If we have a wet summer, then we won't have that problem. As you rightly say, it's a combination of the rainfall and water conservation methods, both with the customer and indeed with Irish Water.
If we have weather like today, for instance, bright enough today, maybe the odd shower, that won't do it.
It certainly won't. The short-term actions that we're planning here will reduce the likelihood of us having to introduce those restrictions. But ultimately, if we do not have rain by, say, October of this year, then we're looking at those drastic restrictions being introduced.
But of course we will have rain, won't we?
Yes, we will, yeah.
But we won't have enough, is that your fear?
Yes, the short-term view is that the rain will be here for maybe 2 or 3 weeks.
Now, if we don't have rain for 2 or 3 weeks, does that mean in 8 weeks you have this crisis?
In 8 weeks' time, if with the status quo remains as it is and we don't have the customers participating with us in relation to conservation at home, both in the kitchen and the garden and the bathroom, we could be facing those restrictions that I've mentioned, yes.
Okay, so at the moment, washing your car if you live in these areas, feeding your garden, are they okay?
No, we have asked and we will be following up with this media release to issue individual leaflets to all customers. And the likes of washing, we're asking customers to refrain from washing their cars, hosing down their yards, watering their garden with the water that we supply. We're asking for customers to help us with the problem that we have.
And specifically, again, the areas where you're asking people now, don't wash your cars, don't water your garden with the water supply provided by Irish Water. You're saying that to people living in areas serviced by Loch Colm or Colm Kill and Loch Fad. And those areas are Milford, Kerrykeel, Rathmullen, Remelton, Quigley's Point, Maville, Redcastle, parts of Greencastle. You're saying to those people today, you are being asked now to conserve water in a very serious way.
Yes.
Or else we're looking at banning water for, I mean, this is serious stuff.
Yeah, we're asking customers to play their part with us to help us having to introduce those restrictions that we've mentioned, yes.
Okay, and you don't think that it's a bit late coming to people now and telling them this when we're 8 weeks away from a crisis, when you've known for months that potentially this crisis was coming?
Yes, well, as I said, we have been monitoring the situation in detail with the progress meetings since April. We issued 2 media releases in early May. We're now in the middle of July, and the rain hasn't come to any significant impact on the raw water sources. So we're asking, as I said, we're asking the public to conserve water at home, in their businesses, in their schools, check for overflows, check that there's no leaks in their properties, and to report leaks to the Irish Water help desk number, and we will take action to address any issues that arise.
Okay, and there are, you say, illegal links to the water as well. You were saying people are...
Yes, we have come across, particularly in the likes of refurbishment of water pipes, we have come across connections that were not known to us.
Okay. So people who have leaks and know there are leaks on their land or wherever, they need to take action now because this is impacting. Now, the question is bound to be asked at this point, Lawrence. If we're in this situation now, 8 weeks away from a crisis where you're going to be telling people, potentially in 8 weeks, that the water's cut off at night and a period during the day as well in these areas, serious stuff, then is this something we're going to be seeing repeated and repeated and repeated? Because these weather patterns, we're told by the experts, are here to stay.
Yes, just before I answer your question, just could I give you the number for people to actually report? The number we would ask customers to report any leaks is 1-850-278-278. So if they ring that number, we will get a note of it and we will get the local teams to address that. In relation to your specific question, in the East Innishowen area, Irish Water are currently investing €5.8 million in bringing a connection from the Eddie Fullerton Dam across to Quigley's Point. We also have water main rehabilitation projects, which are estimated at $750,000 for high priority mains that we know are problematic. So we're hoping that with that investment, which won't materialise until December 2018, that we won't have the type of problems that we're having now in the East Innishowen area.
Because you'll be taking it from the Fullerton Dam.
Yes, that's the principle.
And what happens to people that are now being serviced from the Fullerton Dam? Will their water supply change?
The water supply...
You're saying there's plenty there?
Yes, there's plenty of water in that resource.
So there's plenty in the Fullerton Dam to look after East Innishowen. and that's what you're saying will happen.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so that although there have been questions over that in the past, you're saying categorically it won't impact on anybody else's supply.
Yep.
Okay. And as for the other supply?
In the Milford area, there is a project to lay a main from Kilmacrenan over to the Remelton area at a cost of $1.1 million to supplement that area, which will take the load off the Milford supply zone. We also have a project to bring water from Cranford at a cost of $750,000, bring that water from Cranford Water Treatment Plant south into Milford. So again, those projects were identified whenever Irish Water came, were formed in January 14, to address the problems that we're experiencing. The problem that we have is that we haven't got that stuff in place to deal with the current problem.
When will it be fixed? As in, when will that be all fixed? Fullerton Dam sorted and this other problem for Loch Columbkill?
The Fullerton Dam project will be complete by December 2018.
That's that problem, yes. Resolved, you say?
Yes.
And the other problem?
The other ones will be in place by 2018, 2019.
So, in the next year, potentially, we're facing this situation on an ongoing basis.
Until we get the solar infrastructure in place, we could be facing this if we don't experience the rainfall that we should be getting for this time of the year.
Okay. Fix the leaks, sorted, says a listener. Is that a fair comment?
Well, at the weekly progress meetings that we have with Donegal County Council, that is an area that we look into, and what we're actually doing is measuring the time it takes when a leak is reported to when it is repaired. And I can tell you that for these two water supply zones, we are reacting, which is a priority for us, to fix the leaks whenever they're reported to us.
Who pays for the fix?
Irish Water pays for those fixes.
If it's on somebody's land?
If it's on somebody's land, then we will help them identify the location.
Is that one of the problems, though? Because people think, well, if I find a leak, or if there's a leak and it's not on Irish Water's space, I'm going to have to pay for it. Is that why people are reluctant to report them?
We're offering assistance to help people to find the leak, and depending on the situation, it will dictate as to who will actually pay for the actual repair. Irish Water are offering a first fix free service for customers, basically domestic customers, to have those types of leaks repaired.
And how do you know if you have a leak? Is it very obvious?
It is obvious in some cases, but in other cases I'm aware that people have been experiencing very, very high leakage levels and it's not affecting their level of service in their home.
So they wouldn't know?
They don't know. They might hear a noise sometimes where the water is leaking away, but it doesn't impact on their showering or their dishwashers or their washing machines.
So what noise would they be listening for?
They would hear a vibration in their pipework, and it would go around the house. That's one indicator of a leak.
Right.
So if people have a concern in that respect, again, ring that number, and we will get our engineers to call to that customer and check that connection out.
Drought in Donegal, well, that's a first. We had rain Sunday, lots of it. We must be the wettest county in Ireland, so where is all this water going? I mean, that's what people are saying. They can't believe that you're talking about a drought in a place like Donegal where we seem to have endless amounts of rain. But you're saying that the pattern for the last year is that we've had less.
Yes. Just as a matter of interest, we had a great Saturday, last Saturday.
Yeah, it rained a lot.
And it rained a lot there on Sunday. Our records would indicate that that water that fell in what is called the catchments that feed into these two locks, that none of that water actually ended up in the lock.
How can that be?
The ground and the vegetation soaked that water up before it got to... so the ground is not waterlogged.
Right.
So it's taking that water whenever it falls. And that's one of the problems that we have.
So so this is the problem. If you have good weather and then you have a whole pile of rain, it doesn't reach the reservoirs because it goes into the...
Yes, it depends on the intensity and the moisture levels in the soil.
Okay, we were led to believe that the Fullerton Dam would solve all the water problems of Inishowen, and that was when the Fruit of the Loom was going strong. Well, you're saying it has the potential to solve this problem anyway in East Inishowen.
Yes, the Eddie Fullerton Dam will become what is called a hub for water supply, not only for the Inishowen area, but Irish Water's long-term view to actually extend that system up into Letterkenny to help with the water supply in the Letterkenny town.
From the Follett and Pollen Dam?
Yes. Yeah.
Serving Letterkenny?
Yes.
How would that not, I mean, because I know people in Inishowen would worry about this, how would that not impact on people? If there's, you know, Letterkenny's getting serviced by this dam and water supply in Inishowen, how would that not impact on them?
There is an engineering term called headroom, and Eddie Fullerton Dam has quite a significant amount of volume of water present that can accommodate the demands that we are asking for to accommodate.
Okay, we're doing something wrong, says the caller. How do countries like Spain and France manage? You have practically no rainfall in the summer months. How do they manage, those countries?
Well, again, they take the same approach. They store the water that falls during the wintertime, and they also take water from the sea through desalination.
Do we do that?
No, not in Ireland, no.
Why
not? But we store the water that does fall in the wintertime. And as I explained previously, we did not get that intensity the previous summer, winter.
And this idea of taking the seawater?
It's not an option that Irish Water have considered yet. We have a section that deals with long-term forecasting, and we're currently using the resources that we have and building and making them better to accommodate the fluctuations in supply.
That's another way of saying we don't need to do that because we think we'll have enough rainfall.
Yes.
If people fix their problems and conserve water properly.
Yes.
That's what you're saying. But that's always an option, isn't it, seawater?
It is, yes, yes.
And can that be done?
It can be done. It's quite a costly exercise. And as I say, I don't believe it's in Irish Water's strategic plan to do any of that type of work.
Okay. And another caller who says, has the council already dropped the water pressure in the Rathmullen area? Our pressure is terrible. It's not the council, but it's Irish Water. But
yes.
Anyway, people still get you mixed up.
Yes.
The water pressure is not good. Having big problems with showers not working properly in our house, Rathmullen.
Yes, again, it depends on the location of the house in question. We have not implemented any pressure reduction on any of these areas, but it is our intention going forward to pressure reduce some areas at night time because we can save water by doing that as well.
What about the reservoir at Calais, also known as Calais Basin?
Calais Reservoir is the property of Northern Ireland Water,
oh.
And it's not an Irish Water asset. And it
do we get some of that water?
No.
There's no arrangement.
No.
Okay. The global warming experts say we're going to get warmer, wetter weather.
Yes.
That's not good, is it then?
Well, if it's wetter, it will be good.
But you're saying if it's warm, it's not. So
yes.
It can work the other way.
Yes.
If it's too warm and then wet.
Yes.
It's I just can't believe I'm hearing this morning. How did they allow it to get so bad? Where are our politicians and TDs this morning? Why are they not pushing to have a few more reservoirs put in place? What about that?
Well, as I said earlier on, we have a long-term strategy for these two supply zones. I've covered most of that.
Is there an option to build another reservoir?
At the minute, it's not. It's not on our immediate horizon.
Has it been looked at?
We are considering maybe for a 30-year or 40-year plan to increase the volume at Loch Mourne, which is the loch between Donegal Town and Ballybrae.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
And what would that mean?
It would mean that we would have additional water supply stored at that location.
So how do you store it?
Basically, you build a retaining structure. And whenever the water falls in the catchment. No, it's actually what's called an impounding type reservoir. It's a dam.
Right.
And whenever water falls in the surrounding area through all times of the year, it is captured at that location, similar to the Eddie Fullerton Dam.
Yeah, and I've seen it. It's a remarkable structure, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, the water for Rathmullen was changed from Gort Loch to Loch Column, so they put Rathmullen into the Milford area. Would this not be a big reason why there's now a shortage in the area?
Yeah, one of the options for Milford is that we may have to withdraw the connection to the Rathmullen town. We currently serve about 50% of Rathmullen from the Milford supply zone.
Okay, it's very clear and it's very worrying, Lawrence.
Yes.
You're not here to scare people, but it is a bit scary.
Yes.
And you're acknowledging that. And we're at a critical level for these people living in the area serviced by Loch Column or Loch Column Kill and the other one at Loch Fad, which is for East Innishine. And there is no remedy in sight until 2000 and at least the end of next year.
Yes.
And until then, we could be facing very serious problems.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Lawrence Nash there, Irish Water Asset Operations Regional Water Lead. Back after these.
Sean now on 086 60 25,000.
Well, an investigation is continuing into the circumstances surrounding the death of a child in Dublin. Conor Lally is security and crime editor with the Irish Times. Conor, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sean.
And what more can you tell us about this sad event?
Well, essentially, Sean, the Gardaí have sealed off an apartment in a place called Puddle Park in Kimmage in the south side of the city. They had a call there to the apartment last night, just after 7 p.m. And when the emergency services arrived, there were basically two people with stab wounds at the apartment. One of them was a 3-year-old boy, and he had sadly died. And his mum then was also in the apartment, and she was injured. So she was taken off to hospital, and she has undergone surgery there. And she remains in intensive care in hospital at the moment. So the apartment was obviously sealed off. It's being treated as a crime scene, and the Gardaí have begun a homicide inquiry because essentially they have determined that the 3-year-old boy was unlawfully killed. He was murdered, and they are waiting to interview the injured woman in the hope that she can, you know, provide the key details to establish what actually happened in the apartment last night.
The two were found very badly injured. The child unfortunately died, but the mother, was she also did she also have knife wounds?
She had knife wounds, and as I say, she has gone to hospital and she has undergone surgery there. At this stage, Gardaí really are saying that she's the only person that they want to talk to. They can't, you know, find any signs of a break-in at the apartment. There's been no, you know, third-party suspect that they are seeking, and they want to speak to. You know, they really feel that the injured woman holds the key to the case, and they're hoping that when she is well enough to be interviewed, that, you know, she will be able to tell them what went on.
What do we know about the mother and her child at this stage, Conor?
Well, we don't know too much about the child. I mean, he was a baby boy. He was 3 years old. He lived with his mom in the apartment where the incident took place. We know that his mom is from Iran. She's a doctor. She is she's 45 or 46. My understanding is she'd been in Ireland quite some time, and that she lived in the apartment with her son on her own. And really, at the moment, that's all we know. I mean, certainly, you know, local people in the area where this happened have said that, from what they could see, the woman was very close to her child, that, you know, she loved him and, you know, brought him everywhere, and, you know, he was the apple of her eye. And, you know, they just can't quite understand, you know, why this has happened or what's actually happened. And obviously, at this early stage, I mean, the guards have to try and establish, what has actually happened. You know, we don't know yet, but at the moment, really the inquiry is focused on the Gardaí trying to establish when the woman will be well enough to be interviewed, and that, you know, when she is interviewed, they're quite hopeful that she will be able to tell them what happened.
And kind of crucially, you've stated that the Gardaí are not looking for anybody else at this stage in relation to this tragic incident.
Not at this time, no. I mean, that may change when they speak to the injured woman. But as I say, Gardaí don't believe there was a break-in at the family home. And they also believe that the woman lived there on her own with the baby. So, you know, third-party involvement is not suspected at this time. But as with these you know, all of his case is shown. That may change in time, but that is the picture that they're examining at the moment.
And Connor, who raised the alarm here?
That is unclear. The fire brigade received the first call, and when they got to the scene, the Gardaí then were called by the fire brigade. But it's just not immediately clear at the moment whether the, you know, that call came from inside the apartment or whether one of the neighbours, you know, may have heard something and raised the alarm. That part just is not immediately clear.
It must have been an awful scene, and I noticed the teddy bear and the candles. People are leaving tributes, and there must be absolute devastation in the local area.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, according to local people there, you know, the injured woman and her son, they would have been seen around, you know, the area quite a bit. You know, they would have spoken to people as they passed them in the street, and, you know, indeed going in and out of the apartment block. So they were quite well known in the area, and I suppose really people in the area just find it very hard to believe that a three-year-old boy, you know, whom they know quite well, has ended up dead in a very, you know, violent way. It's just really out of the blue, and people are very upset, obviously.
Yeah, Connie, you mentioned that the mother is a doctor. Was she practicing in Ireland, do we know?
My understanding is that she was practicing at the, you know, that she is a practicing doctor. I mean, where she practiced, we're just not sure of. I mean, those kind of details will become clearer as the day goes on.
Okay, Conor Lally, thank you for joining us this morning. That's the security and crime editor with the Irish Times on this very sad incident in Dublin, where a three-year-old boy was found stabbed at an apartment in Puddle Park in Kimmage in Dublin. He was pronounced dead at the scene. His mother, who's in her 40s and believed to be originally from Iran and believed to be a doctor, had also serious injuries. It's believed to be knife wounds inflicted on her, and Gardaí are waiting to question her at the moment. But she's in intensive care herself. It's 12 minutes past 11 o'clock, and we'll be back after the break. See you in a couple of minutes' time. You're welcome back to the programme. Keep the calls coming in. A lot of you have been calling in on the water issue as well. Very shocked to hear what you're hearing today in particularly in those areas that we mentioned, because people are very worried about the idea of their water being switched off at night and during the day. So 8 weeks away from that, unless there are big changes. That's what we're being told today from Irish Water. Now, Councillor Michael McBride's on the line, and very good morning to you, Michael.
Good morning, Sean. How are you?
Hang on, let me just do that. Press a button, I couldn't hear right. Very well, thank you, Michael. Michael, you're on today because you've been talking in relation to the lack of, and this isn't the first time this has been raised, by the way, it's been raised on numerous occasions in the past, the lack of public toilet facilities in the Letterkenny area. Now, this is as old as Methuselah's goat, this issue, isn't it? But you're talking in specifically, anyway, about the Letterkenny retail park as well. You say it's such a busy area, and people, you know, when they need to go, they need to go, and they can't get anywhere to go.
I think that's correct, Sean. You know, when we look at the Letterkenny retail park, there's a full development of all types of different shops down there. And I think myself, you know, it's not uncommon there when people go to shop that they could spend 3 or 4 hours there, going from shop to shop. A lot of these people may have elderly people with them, may have children with them, and there's no public toilet there for them to use. So I think, you know, in this day and age, that's just totally unacceptable.
Now, of course, we could all say, well, why wasn't this thought about in the planning? You know, I mean, when these places are planned, does nobody think to say, well, if you're going to build that kind of retail sort of shopping area, you've got to have toilets for people?
I would agree with you 100%, Sean, and I know we're just in the middle of, as a matter of looking at right now, the new county development plan, and I think that in this day and age that there should be a provision in there that anybody that gets planning for these types of developments, that, you know, it should be compulsory that they provide public conveniences, public toilets for your customers.
Now, you're receiving plenty of complaints yourself, I'm told.
Well, I suppose, Sean, when I kind of have to say that nobody lifted the phone and rang me about it, that's something that I would come up in conversation, you know, just several times, you know, over a period of time. I think any time that you sit down and be having a conversation with anybody that has been spent any time in that area, that inevitably the subject of toilets come up, or the lack of toilets come up. So, look, I think it's a big issue, and I think it's something that, talking to some of the former town councillors about it over the last number of days, they say that it has come up, it has been raised many times at town council level, but nothing had happened on it. So I think it's come high time that we, maybe as a council, and I've been looking for that support today from the other members, that we would draft a letter, write it off to the owners of the complex there, asking them to provide the toilets for the general public.
Yeah, it's a difficulty for some of the shops because, you know, people go in, they often have children with them, you know, children, they have to go and they have to go, you know, and there are other people who've got medical conditions where they need to use a toilet and they can't wait. And they'll say to the shop, can I please use your toilet, the child or whatever, and they'll say, no, it's our policy, you can't use the toilet in here, we don't allow it, or our bosses don't, or our owners don't, or our insurers don't. This is a problem people are facing.
That's exactly right, Sean. I mean, people go down there, and I'm sure that they slip into different places, maybe food outlets and stuff like that. They use the toilet whenever as a match as nature calls. But at the end of the day, that's not an acceptable situation. And to be fair to people that are, you know, running their own businesses, it's unacceptable that people should have to be in and out on a regular basis to use the toilet. I think, you know, there's a place of businesses for the customers that are using that business. And I think, you know, it's unfair that they should have to carry the can.
Yeah. But in fairness now, you're going to write off to the owners of the retail space itself.
Yes.
But they might well say, it's not our responsibility.
Well, look, we'll have to wait and see what response they come back with, but I would be very disappointed. I mean, we'd have to look at the rental income that they would have there. I think it would be very substantial. I think most of them units are all occupied, and I think it would be a small enough token for them to come back and to invest with the public convenience is there for the general public that are using their business premises.
Yeah, but if you I know it sounds simple, just build toilets, but it isn't that simple. You know, they have to be maintained, it's costly, and the council haven't been the greatest at providing these facilities, as you well know, locally and throughout the county over the years.
I would agree with that. As a man says, when you go around Donegal and have a look at it, there's some places where they have public toilets and they work very well, and there's other places where they've got public toilets and they don't work quite as well. I mean, you can go to places like Downing's, the public toilets there, and I think, you know, it's a credit to them. But it's their own tidy towns, probably, you know, that are providing some of the local scheme workers and that are putting in the effort. There's many other places that I could name, maybe that they don't work so well, but that's down to the individual and the local organisation of it. And I think, you know, the cost of providing maintenance on toilets is not that high in general. That's my own opinion on it.
So very true when you're leaving a show and spend 2 or 3 hours in the retail park and no toilet, it's just not good enough, says a caller. And you're right, people are going into other businesses where they're maybe not necessarily spending a penny, but they're spending a penny, if you get my drift. So, you know, the pubs end up, or as you say, restaurants or food outlets that are supplying toilets, they end up being the public toilet for everybody else.
That's exactly what's happening down there. I think everybody's quite well aware of it, and I'm sure most of us that use that area of town for shopping would have been maybe caught out on numerous occasions while you might have to try and find a toilet to use down there. I think it's just completely unacceptable the way it is at the moment, and I'll be hoping that, you know, after the meeting today, that maybe we can get something moving to try and get some toilets in that area for the general public. And look, maybe we'll have to go down and get a few petitions signed and send them off to the owners if they won't listen to us, you know, the first time around. So, look, I wouldn't give up on it. I think it's something that we need, and that's the reason I'm putting the motion forward here today.
Yeah, and you've mentioned, I know, in your conversations with us before coming on there, you know, elderly people, children, people who have prostate problems, people who need to go to the loo when they need to go to the loo. And, you know, it's a desperate situation for them, and they can't get a toilet within an area like that. But, again, it may well be down to the planning, and you've just mentioned the county development plan. I think, you know, that's a conversation that might come up later on in the programme today as well. And that's the time to be making these points, isn't it?
Well, I think so. You know what I mean? Obviously, we missed the boat first time around, and maybe at that particular point in time, it wasn't a condition of planning. It wasn't put in as a condition of planning. Therefore, it probably at that time didn't need to be. But I mean, that doesn't mean that there's not a need for it. We know there's a serious need for it, and I think we need to move to try and have the facilities.
Okay, well, you're going to send a letter off, and you say if that doesn't work, there may be a petition?
Well, I'm going to ask the councillor to support me today, asking maybe that the municipal council would send a letter off, agreed by all councillors. And I would imagine that I should get unanimous support today for that in the chamber.
Okay, bloody hell, this isn't new. How many councillors are going to come on and talk about the lack of facilities and go away and do sod all about it? This is nice. 12 years plus and no toilets. They talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. In other words, I mean, I can understand the frustration. I mean, you're doing something or trying to do something now, but they're saying this has been said before, we've heard it all before, and nothing's been done.
Oh, we have to accept that, yeah. I mean, like I said that earlier in the interview here, that I've spoken to many of the boys who sat in the town council here, and they said it was something that came up on numerous occasions. Like you say, nothing has been done, but I don't think we can give up on it. I think we still have to try and pursue it to see if we can find a solution to the problem.
Okay, listen, we'll leave it there for now. Councillor Michael McBride, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Sean.
Councillor Michael McBride there. 25 past 11 is the time. This is Highland Radio. We're taking your calls and comments on the main station number. Keep them a-coming. 07491 25000 if you're phoning us, if you're texting into us, 086 60 25 5000. And hello to my old friends. Sent me a nice wee text in there, and it's much appreciated, let me tell you. I'm reluctant to start mentioning, because if I mention one, I'm not going to be mentioning all the other nice people who've been sending in texts and cards and everything else. And I just want, I'm going to say a big thank you to them all, because it's so kind and so nice. And I'm going to keep all these cards and everything else, as I said yesterday, and I'll look over them and cry over them later and say, oh, that was it, and those were the days, eh? Anyway, thanks again, and there's so many nice people who sent in nice texts, and they're all appreciated, and I know who you are, and you know who I am, and it's very touching, thank you. Anyway, we're going to take, in case you're wondering, that's about me leaving, and that's why I'm getting the text, in case you're wondering what kind of a rant that was. Back after the break. Welcome back. Sadie, hello and good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
And I presume you'd be supporting Councillor Michael McBride and his call for toilets to be placed in and around the Letterkenny Retail Park.
Yeah, they should have toilets, public toilets there. Because I was in there about 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I was busted, right? And I asked the lady in the shop, does it have a toilet? And she says, no. She says, the nearest one is Dunn's. I went, Dunn's? She says, yeah. And I just made it and no more. And I've got a bladder problem.
So,
you know what I mean?
When you need to go, you need to go. Right, okay. So when
that's bloody ridiculous, you know what I mean?
When you need to go, you need to go. And you said,
well, I need to go.
and would you come across this often, though? Or is it just, I mean, because a lot of shops have a policy that they don't let you use their toilets.
No, they don't. Aldi's and Lidl's sometimes I'll let you in if you're really, really desperate. But
well, I presume people don't. I presume people don't go to the loo, and you know, just for the fun of it. So, you know, if you ask somebody to use the loo, presumably you need to go.
Yeah.
Now
you have to walk a half a mile nearly to get a toilet. I think it's ridiculous out there.
Yeah,
absolutely ridiculous.
And it's not. I mean, in fairness, it's you know, it's not the staff. It's that's their job. They're told to say
no,
this.
Oh, yeah.
So you asked the shopkeeper, the shop assistant, could you use the loo? And was she embarrassed that she couldn't let you? Or
no, she just went, oh, they need his toilets, it's Dunn's. And I looked at her and I went, Dunn's. And I went, I'll never make bloody Dunn's. I did.
Well, you did good. Glad to hear.
I was crossing my legs when I was walking.
Well, that was you, was it? I remember. Yeah, yeah.
No, I think with all the shops that's there, you know, in the retail park, I think it's ridiculous they don't have public toilets. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
I mean, there's wee kids, you know, they need the toilet.
Yeah, but you see, some of the shops, they'll tell you why they don't allow you to use their toilets, because they'll say, for instance, that they have problems with shoplifting,
yeah,
and they have problems with security because toilets might be near to the offices, and you know they say the insurance companies won't allow it and all of that.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, you'll go to some retail stores, and you mentioned a couple of them there that will let you use their toilets sometimes. Some of those outlets do have public toilets, and then other ones don't for some reason. But anyway.
Right. Oh, I don't know why, but they should have.
All right. Okay.
Okay, then.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Sean.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Sadie there. She gave us a bit of a laugh, but it's a serious point, isn't it? And she says, I'm 65, I've got a bladder problem, and I need to go, and I don't need to be told. Head off to Dunn's, as if Dunn's were the public toilet, which it isn't, of course. It's a fine store, but apparently they have a public toilet, so go and use theirs. That doesn't seem very fair, does it? But well, I suppose the assistant's doing their best. It's not their responsibility. Back to the water issue. Another water issue. Sean, you think we're living in Spain, all this talk of water conservation. They get, on average, 10 days of rain per year, and when Ireland gets a dry spell for a couple of weeks, it's time to lock down. What a joke. Are you sure that he's living in Ireland, the island that gets more or less nothing else but rain? Apparently not. You see, we think that, because every time I read a forecast here, more or less. Now, maybe the odd day, we say bright and sunny all day. But most days we say things like, it's going to be dry and cloudy with the odd shower. Like, that's normally what the forecast says, doesn't it, when we're reading it? Let me see what today says. Actually, it says, we'll start cloudy and damp locally, even that bit of dampness, but it will brighten up as the day goes on. So that's quite a nice forecast today, but not good news for Irish Water. But the Irish Water app was saying, no, we're taking the weather statistics from, you know, the people who know, and they're telling us that we've had less water, or we are certainly monitoring our supply, and there's less water falling and has been over the last year, and that's the problem. And then when we get it, he did explain it well. He said when you get a dry spell and then it rains heavily like Sunday, it doesn't necessarily fill the reservoir. It doesn't make its way there. It goes into the ground or whatever and doesn't make its way there. That's what he was saying to us this morning. So in explanation for why we have this major crisis coming up. Sean, the last five major leaks would have kept every area with enough water if the system was suitable. Now, he did say there's an awful lot of leakage. People need to be reporting their leakage, particularly in these areas that were mentioned. And he said, don't be washing your cars, don't be watering your lawns. Now, that's the kind of thing people maybe like to do, isn't it? But don't be doing it because it's wasting so much water and you can't afford to do that in these particular areas. So that's the news from Irish Water today. Keep your calls coming in. Keep them coming our way. I just want to give a wee mention to a big summer night out. If you're looking for a great night, Tuesday the 1st of August, that's the big one. Robert Mazzell and the band, Robert Mazzell. And Philomena Begley and Johnny McAvoy and Susan McCann and Louise Morrissey and Mick Flavin. That's the super lineup there. And Pio's going to be the host with the most. And it's happening on the 1st of August in the Mount Eragle Hotel. If you want tickets for Highland Radio summer concert, great concert if you've got people over on holidays at the moment, then give us a call or go to highlandradio.com where you can buy the tickets or drop into one of the local outlets or call into the Mount Eragle Hotel itself and get your tickets for that big show. And there are still a few places, but only a few places left for the trip to see Daniel O'Donnell. If you want to give us a call, we can give you more details on that. This texter says, if you're pregnant, a shop has to allow you use of their toilets. Do they? Or is that something you've heard, or is that for definite? And I don't know if that's true, but you say it is. Maybe we'll get that one clarified. What about the lady who's got the bladder problem? What about the man who's got the prostate problem? What about the mother who's got the child that needs to use the loo? And I've heard stories of children, you know, with special needs who needed to go and couldn't go. I spoke to one parent who said that their child wet themselves after being told they couldn't go in the shop. There you are. No toilet in Lifford. You get off the bus from Dublin, first thing you need, a toilet. No bank, no hotel. We have lost out badly, says Lily. Okay, that's Lily calling us about Lifford today, 07491 25000, and you can text in on 086 60 25000. Now let's have a chat to John Leach, who's from Irish Water Safety. We've heard reports that there is a potentially dangerous lion's mane jellyfish washed up on a beach in Donegal. Massive jellyfish, apparently, found by a passerby at Carn Beach in Ardraw. Now, John, hello, good morning.
Good morning, Sean. Thank you for having me on air. And yes, they are a dangerous, can be a very dangerous jellyfish. First of all, they're going to sting anyway. They give one of the more severe stings of all the jellyfish that come to our shores. They, as you rightly said, they are the biggest of all the jellyfish that ever come onto our shores. The bell, if you like, you know, the dome or the bell of the jellyfish can extend up to a diameter of 2 meters.
Wow.
Yeah, and then they have these big 8 lobes that come down out of the bell, and then you have 8 clusters of 150 tentacles off each one. So they are a really pretty nasty bit of stuff.
John, whenever they sort of get washed up, as this one did, are they normally dead, or do they still cause problems? Or what?
Yes, they are dead, but they still cause problems.
Right.
They will sting for many days until they dry out, and that's why the local authorities are normally very good. Either the lifeguards or people come out from their environment section and they take them, remove them, and they bury them. Because the children particularly, anybody for that matter, standing on them, on their tentacles, will get stung. And the difficulty, I suppose, with this one is that it can cause anaphylactic shock. And, you know, each year we've had, you know, ambulances rushing out and helicopters, in fact. You had one, by the way, up in the Foyl last year, where somebody had to be taken away again with anaphylactic shock. So I'm afraid it looks like, five years ago, I'd be surprised if somebody told me that those lion's mane jellyfish up in Donegal. But they seem to be just migrating further north all the time. And obviously, they can be a nuisance to swimmers. We're seeing just generally, the reports that we're getting is that there's more jellyfish of all the 9 species that would come into Ireland.
Yeah.
And in fact, just outside our office here where I'm looking, which is the estuary for the River Corrib, there's jellyfish out there in the tide. They came in with the high water this morning, and we just can't. I mean, the old folk from the Claddagh, I never remember jellyfish coming up in the river like that.
It's all very strange, isn't it?
It is, and I don't think any of our scientists have quite figured it out yet.
Yeah.
And of course, last year we had the big infestation of the Portuguese man o' war, the biggest one in known memory.
And that's been before.
But only it's very small numbers. But that last year was the biggest invasion almost of them, because they're in fact, strictly speaking, they're not jellyfish. They're a siphonophore, so they float on the surface like a rugby ball, but they look much more beautiful. They look like a little ship sailing along, and that's why the Portuguese were the first across the Atlantic. Well, apart from St. Brendan, that is, and St. Brendan was much further north, so there wouldn't have been so many jellyfish. But in the warmer latitudes, the Portuguese saw them first, and that's why they called it the Portuguese man of war, because they looked like a little ship sailing on the surface.
Okay, so if you see one of these, because I mean, a child would be very curious, for instance, you know, go poking at it.
That's right. Yeah, that's like the classic one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so if they do get stung, well, then what you really do is obviously avoid getting stung yourself, which can unfortunately happen when people are dealing with these things. Is to remove all the tentacles with a gloved hand if you have it. If you don't, use a plastic card, use your stick, use a towel or a tea towel, your fingertips very, very carefully. But I don't advise that one, because it can get caught into your fingertips, but it's better than using your fingers. Don't rub the affected area. That's what's very, very important, because if you do that, it tends to release more venom into the skin and it makes the sting an awful lot worse. So you can be really careful. And then rinse the affected area you know, copiously with seawater. You know, I mean, get, if there's a bucket and a spade, or use the bucket and pour it on, you know, really strong. Don't use things like fresh water. Fresh water makes it worse. Vinegar makes it worse. Alcohol obviously, which some people thought might work. Or urine, which some people thought for years was a good thing to do. Yeah, nonsense. Okay, don't use that.
I mean, whoever tried that out first, like, you know, that's what I wonder about these things. Like, who would think to pee on it, you know?
No, I... Well, I suppose if you're desperate, you might. Yeah.
Well, we've just been talking about that. That's another issue, but anyway.
Right.
Okay. But this is... why is it called the lion... I suppose, does it look like a lion's mane then? Or?
I think it's because of the big, heavy tentacles. It looks... It has the colour. It is that sort of browny, yellowy, and sometimes even a red colour. You know, the way in a lion, you have the contrast between the skin, which is lighter, and the mane, which is darker. And I think that's why they call it the lion's mane jellyfish, because you could relate to it being like a lion's mane.
Okay.
And hence why they call it a lion's mane jellyfish, yeah. But so they're very, very big. They're much bigger than your normal ones. So like a compass one is one that you would have up there. And the common jellyfish, which is the purple one, you know, the little purpley, and they give a very mild sting. And the compass then one looks like, when you look down on the bell or the dome, it looks like all the points of the compass around it. And then it's a sort of a brown, little dark brown, like lines through it, through the translucent body. But they're all reasonably harmless. They're not very nice. It's a bit like a nettle sting. But lion's mane you must take much more seriously, because they do cause a very severe sting. They closed down a beach in Kilkee yesterday because 16 of them were washed up on the shore. Now, a lot of it is relating to the full moon we had on Sunday, so that tends to bring the jellyfish in much further than they normally come when you have neap tides. And the settled weather, of course, as well, it also tends to mean that you get more of them in. So you keep your eyes open for them if you have children on the beaches. And if you see them, report them to the lifeguards or report them to the county council, and they'll remove them.
Mm. Okay, John, thanks as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you much.
John Leach, Chief Executive of Irish Water Safety, on the lion's mane jellyfish. Now, we're going from the stinging jellyfish in a wee while. We'll be talking about the stinging weed. We're getting some more information on this weed that one of our listeners highlighted yesterday. They called us because they... didn't know what to do. They said, you know, this weed is so dangerous, it can cause burns, the scars can last for 7 years. And he said, you know, something needs to be done about it. And so we got on to the council, and we have received a response from them, actually, this morning. Just after I spoke to John, we got a response, actually. And I just said we hadn't had a response, and then we got a response. So they're not putting forward anybody to speak to us about it, but they're going to... tell us what to do, I presume. So I shall read the statement out shortly. But this is a particular weed. Is it hog? What's it called again? Hogweed. And it causes horrible burns. And it's been located in Newton Cunningham and in Remalton as well. So obviously people were fascinated by this. So I'm going to get some more information from somebody who knows. Shall we have some music? I think so.
Together near the ocean shore, hand in hand, you and I. Let's cherish every moment we have been given. The time is passing by. I often pray. Receive your calling before I awake. Could I make it through the night? Just another test of time. The next life that we live in remains to be seen. Will you be by my side? I often pray before I lay down by your side. And if you receive your calling before I awake, could I make it through?
Cool and the Gang and Cherish, and we'll be back after the break. Loads more to come.
The Sean Doherty Show, brought to you by the Errigal Arts Festival, from 4th to the 23rd of July. Fun for all the family. More info on eaf.ie.
Text Sean now on 086 60 25000.
To Columba and Josephine Clark in Bodegee, who are 25 years married today. Happy silver wedding anniversary to Columba and Josephine from all the Coyles in Dromore. And to Ethna Fullerton, happy birthday, Ethna, from Anhone. And Ethna is in Buncrana. And our granddaughter is Sifra McHugh of Rathmullen, who is 8 today, from Nana May and Grandad McFadden, who are in Rye. Now, somebody says in the UK, if you're pregnant, you are entitled to use the toilets in a shop. Now, my friend has two restaurants, and she was telling me this. Now, I know restaurants are different, so I'm just wondering, is that where there might be some confusion? I used to use that excuse many years ago. I got stuck on the underground. I was pregnant, and the guards would take me through to the staff loos. Naughty, wasn't I? Well, if you weren't pregnant, you said you were pregnant to use the loo, was that naughty? Well, it's a little fib, isn't it? Or were you pregnant? You said you were naughty. You're not naughty if you were. And anyway, the idea that all shops have to let you use because you're pregnant, I need to get more clarification on that one, whatever about the UK and restaurants. I'm not sure that extends to shops and all shops. In fact, I doubt it. Even if people, through courtesy, would do it anyway. Why don't Irish Water pay for the repairs with the money they receive from Irish road taxpayers? Or maybe they could have withheld all the bonuses they recently paid to all their staff, says a caller. That's the old issue about water tax and water. Loch Salt has loads of water, says a caller. I live near a man who's running a hose pipe 365 days of the year, all day long. Myself and other neighbours have asked this man to stop it. We have asked why it's constantly running and he just laughs. Can we report this man to anyone? Why is he running it 365 days a year? Is he feeding animals? Isn't that why you see these pipes going into these tanks, but then there's usually a stopcock and it doesn't just run consistently? Surely to God he's not just wasting water from a pipe 365 days a year. He should be reported. He should be. Neil Clark wouldn't like that. He's a former councillor of the Green Party. You wouldn't like that, Neil, would you? Somebody running a hose pipe 365 days of the year?
No.
Why would you do that?
You would think there's no service of water at the same time, but... there's probably a shortage of ways of collecting it.
Yeah.
You know that.
Anyway, we sort of alluded to this earlier because we were talking about the lack of toilets in the retail park, Neil, which you'd be very familiar with.
Yeah.
And you know, Michael McBride was saying they need to do something about it. The council need to send off a letter now. Why wasn't it thought about whenever it was all being given planning permission and all of that? And he said that's why the county plan's so important. And that's why we're chatting to you, because you say that in relation to the county development plan, submissions need to be made and the public should be understanding this and get involved.
Yeah, because it's the roadmap for the future. And the future is going to happen with or without you. And if you have, say, property or land or whatever, and you're thinking sort of, it doesn't concern me, then you may lose out by default, because you could very well find out that your land has been zoned green, and your children couldn't get a plan permission for a house there, for example. There could be a road going through your land. Anything can happen. It could have the potential to be very wealthy if it was a case of your land was owned for multiple housing developments or whatever. And you could find out maybe that you couldn't build a house at all.
Now, historically, Neil, these development plans have been, you know, made public and submissions are requested and all of that. But historically, do you think people bother much with them?
No, they don't. And maybe somewhere down the line, you'll find out then that there's been a considerable effect on yourself. I remember the reason I became aware of it, a very good friend of mine came to me and said, more or less, that you zoned my field green, because I was in the Green Party. And I said, no, we had no hand or part in it. But there was a public consultation about the whole development plan, and probably didn't go and look at it. And he says, no, I knew nothing about it. You know, and now is the time to go and look about it. You have, I think, until the end of the month to make a submission. And then you could probably influence your councillors, because they can vote on the thing and accept it or not accept it.
So you could wake up one day and find out that your land that you had intended for your children could be rezoned green, which would mean that there couldn't be any building on it.
Yeah, it's quite possible. Yeah, the thing about it is, you may be you might have four children, and you might only be allowed to build two houses, because they'll be saying like there's urban development or there's suburban development. You know, and depending on the number of houses around you already. So everyone's interest, and you know, in fairness to the planners, you know, they're professional people. They draw up a plan, and people say, like, why isn't there any toilets? You know, they do the plans. They put in the roads, they put in where the sewers are going to go, they put in where the schools are going to go. But what I'm saying, it may not suit you, so you should go and look about it.
Fair enough. And this friend of yours, you say, he came to you and said, you're in the Green Party, and you rezone my land green, and I've lost out.
Yeah.
And you said I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, and I explained to him how the system worked and all the rest, and he went and he had considerable difficulty getting it overturned, you know.
But did he get it overturned?
He got it overturned, yeah.
Yeah, but Neil,
if you look at it from his point of view, the guy next door had a multiple development just over the hedge from where he was looking to put one house.
Yeah, but Neil, even if you do make a submission, even if you do look and you don't like what you see, will it make much difference?
Well, you know, if you're not in, you won't come out. That's the thing. You know, and these guys, like, at the end of the day, they have an opinion like yourself, and you can hire a professional opinion to get the thing overturned, or you can, say, influence your councillors, and they may see what you're saying. It makes more sense than what they're saying, you know.
Okay.
But once it's like everything else, once it's written down and once it's voted on, and if nobody goes and sort of looks about the thing, then everyone assumes that everyone's happy, you know.
31st of July is the deadline. You still have it.
You know, and the other thing about it, I would say, is that if you look at the development in the countryside and everything else, and there is a tendency to sort of try and send everyone into the towns, and, you know, 9 million people existed in this country like 150 years ago, all over the countryside. And they left little no impact on the environment or on the countryside because of how they lived. you know, and if you do what's sustainable, maybe there's no reason for us all to be stuck in towns and getting on each other's nerves and all the rest. You know, but living in the countryside is an art, and you have to sort of maybe make rules and regulations that people would actually make it very, very sustainable for them to live in, and clusters, and, you know, even, for example, put up their own windmill or whatever and have their own power, and, you know, you could have multiple developments around dotted around, like, for example, if you look at Glenswally, you know, Glenswally is a rural area. It's a thriving rural area now just because of the number of people in it, and the football team is a testament to how people in an area can enhance the area. You know, they don't all need to be in Letterkenny.
Okay, Neil, we've got to leave it there. News is coming up. Thank you for joining us. Thank you. Neil Clark there, former councillor with the Green Party, says, take a look at the county development plan. Don't wait until it's too late. Anyway, it's 12 midday. Okay, it's 12:07, and yesterday we had a caller contact us to tell us that there was a problem in Newton, Cunningham and Remelton. Gabriel was his name, and he said there's a problem in Letterkenny and Remelton with giant hogweed. And I'd never come across this before because we've been speaking so much about the other problem, the Japanese knotweed, that the authorities seem to be getting a bit of a handle on. They're putting up these signs, or they did last year, all over the place saying, don't touch, and all that. Because they cause a lot of problems. But they don't cause the same problem as the giant hogweed, apparently. Now, our friend is convinced that he's seen the giant hogweed, Gabriel, and there is a difference between hogweed and giant hogweed. We're going to find out more because Aina Nilawa is on the line, and Aina knows all about these things, and it's good to talk to you again. Thank you for joining us, Aina.
You're very welcome.
Now, first of all, it was our friend Gabriel, who's also on the other line, who told us about this giant hogweed that he saw in Newton Cunningham, and he was quite surprised to see it, and he was warning people stay well away from it. Now, he was right to do that, I presume.
Well, yes, it's a noxious weed, and if you touch it and the sap of it gets onto your skin, it can damage your skin and cause problems. So obviously you don't want to be over poking at it and pulling it and touching it.
Now, how common, Aina, or uncommon is it?
Well, the giant hogweed is an enormous plant, first of all. It's actually as big as yourself. It's not like the ordinary. See, the hogweed is a member of the umbellifer family. So these are flowers with white umbels on the tops of them. In other words, the flower head is like the spokes of an umbrella. And in the ordinary hedgerows around the country, we have things called cow parsley, things called ordinary hogweed, and they are in the hedges, and they don't, you know, they just sit there. They're part of the flora of Ireland.
They're common
enough.
Giant, yeah.
They're common enough. Yeah. I mean, you drive through the roads and the ditches are full of lovely white flowers, and that's grand. But this giant hogweed is like the triffids. It's actually as big as yourselves, and it was brought into Ireland to swanky gardens for the gentry, because from your house you could look down and see this large, big, huge plant growing beside your water features, because they grow beside watery places. And the quality thought these were lovely things to have in their gardens. And of course what happened was that the seeds of these plants fell into the waterways, were carried away by the water and washed up on the shores of banks. So they tend to spread along waterways, although I have seen them in Dublin along motorways as well, because the seeds can be carried by the, you know, the cars, sort of the back rush of the cars or the wind of the cars can blow them along. But the problem is they grow very large, and the sap they have in them damages the melanin in your skin. So therefore, when the sun shines, instead of getting a nice tan, you have no melanin to protect your skin, and you just get awful blisters. And it never, ever gets fixed. So you're permanently banjaxed if you damage the melanin in your skin from this sap from the giant hogweed.
Okay, now, Gabriel, hello again.
Yes, hello, Sean, how you doing?
I'm very good, and we have our good friend, the Vice President of the Tree Council of Ireland, Aina, on the line, who's explaining this, and you did a great job of doing it yesterday for us. Yes. Now, you came across this giant hogweed in Newton Cunningham, and also in Remelton. You were quite surprised and recent.
Yes, down at the waterfront, down at the farm in Remelton. But yeah.
And the Newton Cunningham one is...
Yes, yeah. On the road, yes, at Tony Havoc there, just, yes.
Yeah.
There were five or six plants there.
we contacted the council straight away, and we've had a response from them this morning.
Yes.
To say, unfortunately, Brendan is not available for interview due to prior commitments, and he'd be the man that would be chatting about this, but that's Brendan O'Donnell. But they say, however, in relation to giant hogweed along public roads, Donegal County Council is asking members of the public to report sightings of giant hogweed along public roads by email to info@donegalcoco.ie, or you can report it online. Or you can phone them. And we're currently mapping sightings and seeking advice from both Invasive Species Ireland and the National Parks and Wildlife Service on the best approach to deal with it. Because actually, they're not sure how to handle this one up here, Aina.
Yeah, well, you see, it's not as bad as the Japanese knotweed in the sense that the Japanese knotweed can spread from any particle. So if you dig it up and you miss a few bits of stems or something, a new Japanese knotweed will grow. Mm. This one grows from seeds. And if you are completely covered up in gloves and long-sleeved clothing, it could be dug up and burnt. It'll be the seeds from this year's plants that spread and give us next year's plants.
That's
the problem.
Anna, could I interrupt you there? Is it what I didn't know, is it an annual plant, a biennial plant, or is it a perennial plant?
Well, I mean, it's supposed to be a perennial plant in the sense that the plant is there, it produces the seeds. The seeds then come up next year somewhere else, so that it's not like a tree. The same plant doesn't grow every year, but it's fed from any seeds that new plants come up next year.
Okay.
And they have huge, big leaves. And the trouble is that they shade out all of the other plants on the river bank, so they die away in the autumn time. But you have no cover on the bank then, and you get erosion of the soil, as well as the damage to your skin from the actual plant. And it's bad for the ecosystem as well too, because your banks are exposed in the winter time, and rain will wash away your soil and damage your fish and all the rest of it, you know.
And Gabriel, you're certain, aren't you, that this is giant hogweed?
This is an umbilifers that are, what I know is hogweed that's taller than human beings, could be 8 foot tall.
Oh yeah, they're taller than a human being, and the leaves are huge. I mean, the ordinary other little thing you have in the hedge, you could pull an ordinary hogweed and put it in a flower vase. You couldn't pull these and put them in the flower vase.
No, we talk about Ramelton. If Declan is listening that owns that particular site, a very dangerous situation was there when I went down. He asked me to go down yesterday to show him. I only thought it was one hogweed plant, but when he went into his yard. He has a yard around Bales, and the yard is full of hogweed, and he's had to stop kids from, he obviously thought just from damaging the bales and dancing on the bales. And so they're in close proximity to where children are playing.
Mm. And who did you take?
There isn't going to be like pollen coming off them or anything like that. You physically have to touch them, and the sap has to go on your hand.
But children are jumping on bales and the hogweed growing.
Oh yeah, no, I know. Of course, I mean kids can. I mean, what happened in Dublin was that the kids in Dublin actually collected them to have hollow stems, and they used them as pea shooters, put them in their mouth, and their mouths were ruined. I mean, you can imagine how awful this was. So I mean, if it's something, if the kids can get into trouble, they will, because you can't imagine what. They can make a little house underneath them or anything at all. I mean, you know, because they're wonderful looking things. They're huge. I mean, they look like something out of a fairy tale. You couldn't, like Jack Beanstalk. I mean, you couldn't imagine something. But, you know, so the kids obviously would be terribly impressed with them, you know,
Anna, could you listen to this for a situation when we're coming back up from the shoreline where all this is the concentration of them down in one particular place, right? Myself and Declan Doherty were driving along the road, and they're on the wood up from Ballylin. There's a single hogweed plant growing in a hedgerow where you would have blackberries and you'd have anything else, people walking along, walking their dogs. And so what I'm saying is that...
And that should be removed. That should be dug up and taken away before the flowers go into seeds. And that would...
The seeds are there. That's the problem. The seeds are there. And I'd like to say, Donegal, in Scotland, if you look on the... I sent the website to Highland Radio, I sent the link. In Irvine Beach in Scotland recently, in the last couple of days, hogweed was found growing in the sand dunes. The place has been cordoned off. Environmental people have been called in to deal with it. And in Scotland, the public are invited. The notices are up. If you see, anglers are asked, and particularly along the riverbank, to report, and they're very anxious to gather up the seed heads at the minute because that reduced it. We had the same problem in Donegal. I don't know how bad it is with knotweed, 5 years ago, Donegal County Council said it wasn't their responsibility. There's no better time to deal with an intruding plant than the current situation, because every good day that's here, the hogweed is growing, the seeds are maturing, there's opportunities for being scattered by birds and machinery and people. And so the really, it's just how it's done. We're always on the back foot. Well, we're caught very badly.
What the council's saying is, and I mean, you're the first man to raise this issue with us, and I would presume with the council as well, because when we contacted them, this is their response. The reports are currently being examined. That's what they said. And they said they wanted to point out there is this difference between hogweed and giant hogweed, which you're familiar with, obviously.
Yes, this is giant hogweed.
Yeah, and they say it is a public health hazard.
Yes.
And they've said they want people to report it, but they're actually looking to get some help, I presume. That's what they're saying, that we're trying to get special advice on this at the moment. So it sounds to me like they're not sure how to handle this.
Yes, well, I would say...
If you cut it down, you see, if you get the sap, the sap is the problem with it, and the fact that it covers so much with its leaves that it prevents other things from growing. They're the two problems with it, really.
Yeah, well it's the burning of people is the one, it's the issue with...
Well, the burning one is the health and safety one, because you can't send fellas out to cut it, which would say things like strimmers. You can do yourself terrible damage if you were to cut it with a strimmer or something like that, because all the sap would go everywhere.
But you see, if you didn't know, and I didn't know, and a lot of people wouldn't have known... And maybe the farmer or the landowner doesn't know. I mean, they might be quite likely to go out with a strimmer and try and cut it down. And you're saying that could be lethal.
Well, only if the sap comes in your hands. But you see, it's a nice warm day. You might have your short sleeves rolled up, or you might have a vest on or something. Yeah. And your skin will be exposed. And that is the problem,
yeah.
I mean, you have to go all dressed up like a beekeeper, nearly, you know, to cut it down.
Okay. And
football,
don't...
If football goes into hogweed, if a football goes into how kids are playing, so they're going to win to get the ball. And
it's
a real hazard.
Now, we're getting photographs sent to us, actually. We've been getting photographs from different areas now. And, you know, to determine the difference between, Aina, hogweed and this problem, giant hogweed. I mean, hogweed in itself is not going to cause a problem. Giant hogweed is potentially. So how do we know the difference?
Well, hogweed, ordinary hogweed, will never be bigger than your knees, never be taller than your knee.
Right.
As I said, you could pick a piece of ordinary hogweed and put it in the vase. This giant hogweed is as big as yourself. The actual flowers are bigger than a dinner plate. I mean, the thing is enormous. Like, it's like a plant on steroids. I mean, it's a huge, enormous plant. And that was why it was brought in as an architectural plant in gardens. The way the giant rhubarb was brought in, the way other of these big, enormous plants were. So it's a big, huge plant. I mean, if you see a plant that's bigger than yourself, this is a giant hogweed.
Okay. Well, now we're getting calls about other types of weeds. I mean, is this becoming an issue? These are imported, obviously. They're not... Somebody has brought these into the country.
Ages ago, I mean, this has been a problem for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
This is not something new. I mean, it's been along waterways down in Limerick for ages, along by the Shannon.
Well, Anna, could I interrupt you, Anna, there?
Yes.
Could I, Anna?
Yes.
There must have been a policy to get rid of it somewhere, because I would have not... I haven't seen giant hogweed in Donegal in the last 30 years. The last place I saw it was on the banks of near, where I'm in Strabane at the minute, along the river here in Strabane and Lifford. I remember a few plants that had been along that riverbank a few years ago. But what I saw on the, when I saw it on the Derry Road, and what I saw down on that farmyard yesterday, it's not right to ask an ordinary citizen like the farm owner there to deal with hogweed. It's too complicated an issue. It's not fair to deal.
Yeah.
And the council did tell him it wasn't their business. They wouldn't put him through yesterday. So
Limerick Council will have dealt with it down on the Shannon. There was a huge pest down there. The inland fisheries people know all about it, because the fisheries people who are on the inland waterways know all about it, because it generally spreads along the banks of waterways in the first instance.
Did you say, Aina, that the council... Sorry, did you say, Gabriel, that the council have said that they don't want to get involved in it?
This particular person, you know, we're talking about the landowner down there. He phoned me, but he's very concerned about it. He phoned the council, and the guy, whoever answered the phone, didn't even put him through to any relevant authority. Said it wasn't their affair.
Wasn't their affair because it's on his land?
Yes, because it's not, it's totally, it obviously came in off the public road onto his property. It's dangerous for him, and it's dangerous for him to try to deal with it. He doesn't know what weed killer to use on it. He doesn't know how to harvest the seeds of it and destroy them.
The council's saying to us today that they want members of the public to report sightings of giant hogweed along public roads. By email.
Yes. Okay.
Now, they're not saying anything about private land. They're saying if it's on public roads to phone them.
Right. Well, if they, anybody knows plants aren't deciding whether we're on a private road or on the public road. But the policy has to be, and in Scotland, all the different agencies work together to invite the public. They highlight anywhere they find they've invited anglers to get involved. Invite all sorts of people to get involved where they might come across it. So they really need, there's no point in saying...
How do they deal with it in Scotland? Do they advise poisons? Do they advise cutting? What do they advise?
They deal with it themselves. The authorities come out and deal with it. I might be able to get a link, Sean, or maybe a contact. I have a contact in Letterkenny who knows somebody who works in this department in Ayrshire. So I sent a link to the Highland Radio to their Facebook page yesterday.
Yes.
Showing some of the strategies that they're using in Ayrshire to get rid of it.
Okay, just stay there. I'm going to complicate it a wee bit now because somebody's called us to say, what about the invasion of the Himalayan balsam weed? Here we go. It's a new one on me again, but not for you two, I'm sure. It's all over the Lifford area, especially the riverbank.
Yeah, that's a lovely plant. It's got beautiful pink flowers
on it, yeah.
And what happens is that it comes into pods, and if you touch the pods, they explode, and all the seeds fly off in all directions.
It doesn't hurt you, though.
It doesn't do any harm to anybody. It looks gorgeous. You might think you'd have it in your garden, but it spreads like madness. Okay. And again, like the giant hogweed, it pushes out all the native plants. It dies away in the winter time. The seeds are all over the soil. Comes back next year and
worse again.
Well, but you can pull it up. It's really got some very shallow roots. And again, at this time of the year, even before those seed heads come, you can go out. Anybody with your bare hands to pull this up. But the problem with that is because it pushes out everything else.
Yeah.
It dies back in the winter. You have exposed areas and erosion.
Right.
But I mean, you're safe to poke at that one. It's not doing you any harm at all.
Let me bring in a casualty of the problem, the giant hogweed.
Okay.
Henry, hello to you.
Hello, Sean. How are you?
I'm very good, Henry. Well, what happened, when, where, how?
Well, about 10 or 12 years ago, I was doing a bit of strumming around my garden, and it's in the Isle of Doe in Clonmany.
Yes.
And the day after, I finished, I had a shower and everything, but I was going out that night, and the day after, I noticed that my arm, some sort of, you know, I thought maybe I'd scratched myself or something like that, but it just kept getting worse, and it kept getting, you know, seemed to be spreading. So I didn't waste much time now. I might have waited about 2 or 3 days, and I went to a lady called Dr. Podmore, she's a skin specialist.
I know her, yes.
And I went into Derry, and as soon as she looked at it, she said, you've been in contact with giant hogweed or cow plant, she called it.
Mm.
And she gave me an ointment for it, and I remember at that time it was a small jar, and it was 37 euros or 37, I don't know if it was pumps away back then or not, but it was around that, and it cleared it up immediately. It was very effective. And the plant that I seen, what I done then, I got some insecticide, and I got the plant. I haven't seen it since now. So that was in Nanny's own, and about 10 to 12 years ago.
Well, it sounds like
it was a weed killer you put on, as you said.
Yeah, I just got a fella and he put some weed killer on it.
Yeah, and that would work all.
And it just killed it. I haven't seen. I've been keeping an eye for it since it grows now. I noticed it when I had it. It had a very strong stem on it, and it had a very broad leaf. You know.
Oh, a big, huge broad leaf.
Yeah, a huge broad leaf.
It's a divided leaf, like a fern. It's not like a normal, divided leaf.
And
you were trimming it, and that was the worst possible thing, because the trimmer actually cut the stem up into little bits.
Yeah, that's right.
Around.
She told me it was most...
I thought you got well. That's good. Yeah.
It was most effective around from the month of June to August.
That's right.
That was the most dangerous time.
Well, obviously, Dr. Podmore had come across this problem with burns, but Henry, it sounds like you got a lucky escape in this sense, that sometimes the scarring can last 7 years.
Well, funny enough now, again, then, my brother-in-law, Anthony, came out about, I had the ointment on it, I had it in, I have a caravan down there, and I had it in the caravan, and I had the ointment there for years. And Anthony showed me his arm, and he had been working out on the roads with the council doing some summer work. And he seemed to have all these small infected spots on his arms. And I said, what were you doing? And Anthony said, well, I've been using a strimmer. So the ointment would have probably been around 5 years old at that time. And we put it on it, and it cleared it up for him. Now, I'm not sure whether he was in contact with hogweed or not, but it certainly looked like it to me.
And was it very burny?
Well, it just keep... really, what it would do... Dr. Podmore said it's a photocell, and it just keeps multiplying. And it just keeps going, and it, eventually it would cover your whole body if you didn't get it stopped. Like.
Wow.
So that's basically it. I know some fishermen, I'd read about some fisherman and somewhere, and actually it ended up costing his death at the, because he had been in contact with it near the rivers. There's quite a lot of it along the rivers, as far as I know, like, so...
You'd want to be covered up. I mean, if you wore sleeves, you wouldn't... I mean,
well, funny enough, when I do strumming now, I always wear a full-length sleeve and a pair of gloves and a mask, because I just got it on my right arm, because when you be holding a strummer, like, you know, I just seemed to hit it, and just got it up my right arm. The fact that I might have had a shower might have helped some of it, but...
Definitely, get it off fairly quickly.
But I didn't realise I didn't have the shower for that reason. It was just the next morning when I wakened up, the arm was just from my elbow right down to my wrist.
Just a bit that was out.
Exposed, yeah.
Aina,
yeah,
Henry, by the way...
Do you know the name of the ointment?
Yes.
Do you remember the name of the ointment, Henry?
I haven't, actually.
I'll have to ring Dr. Podmore. Okay.
It's Dr. Podmore, and I remember she, as soon as she looked at it, she didn't hesitate. She just spotted it right away, and she said, you've been in contact with hogweed, giant hogweed, a cow plant, as it's known.
Yeah, marvellous.
So that was her diagnosis, and she was 100% right.
Spot on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Henry, take care.
Thanks very much, Sean.
Bye-bye. And there you go, Gabriel. There's a victim, but fortunately managed to stop it before it could cause even more problems. And thanks to you for raising this again, and we have raised it with the council, so that hopefully now we'll be on to this. And I believe we've told them the locations, but it would be helpful for you to be chatting to them as well, no doubt. Ask for Brendan O'Donnell when you ring.
Brendan O'Donnell.
Yeah,
okay.
He's a great guy. Okay, thanks, Henry. Thanks, Gabriel. And thanks, Aina, as always. Appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is what I'll miss, actually, when I leave Highland. That's the type of conversation and people like that who come on chat and Henry ringing up and all of that. Great stuff. 12:30 is the time, and we'll be back after these. Welcome back to the programme. Now, Ethna Fullerton, there was another request in for you, Ethna, and I can't see who it came from because the computer kind of went funny on me and I missed out who it came from. It's another one for you, Ethna, anyway, to say hello and happy birthday, but just in case the person who sent the second one in is listening, maybe you'd send it in again and then I'll get your details properly. Sarah, hello to you.
Hi, Sean, how are you?
I'm very good. You've been trying to get planning permission.
Yeah. Well, we haven't actually put any pen to paper as such yet. I went to an architect.
Yes.
And straight out, the architect told me where I'm looking to get planning at the no-go area.
What does that mean?
They're not giving planning anymore for that particular area, that location.
Why?
Well, the reason he was told from the Donegal County Council was that there's too many houses already in that area.
And how many houses are there?
Well, there's 9 houses there, but only one of them's actually a dwelling. The rest of them, holiday homes. Which is absolutely ridiculous.
What's ridiculous about it?
That people can get holiday homes in my local area, and I'm not allowed to build a house there where I want to live.
And when you say there are there people definitely who don't use the houses all the time? Are they
definitely don't use the houses all the time?
They don't live
bank
there.
Bank holiday weekends and Easter holidays and stuff like that.
Okay, so there's only a few houses, 9 or 10, you say?
Yeah.
And you're actually from the area.
Yeah, yeah, from the area. My father owns the land.
And you've got a piece of land there, your daddy has, and he yeah. wants you to have this piece of land to build a house on.
Yeah.
And have you? Where do you live now then?
I'm renting in Inishowen.
Oh, right.
I've been renting for the past 3 years. And I want to get my own house now. I've started a family and I want to move out to my local area, put children to school out there, but I can't get permission, can't get to build a house.
So it's not a question of the land because the land's there and your dad owns it. There are other properties around. Are they close by where you're building it?
They would be close by, but the only one house that's living there would be the house that I'm closest to, and they have no problems with me building. And they can't believe that I can't get building there. They think it's terrible that I can't get a house there on my own land.
And are you blocking the view? Are you on the sea? What?
The area planner for the Donegal County Council, we had...
Okay, okay.
She came out and looked.
Yeah.
And she said it was fine, everything should be great, no problem why we can't build there. She went back to her boss and...
Okay. Let me just bring in Veronica. It's interesting because I think as a result of speaking to Neil earlier on, that, you know, we mentioned the County Development Plan. That's why people have been calling in about planning. But Veronica's on the line too. Hello to you.
Hi, Sean.
Hi. Now, your daughter has applied for planning as well.
Yeah, she has been refused planning permission on the grounds that it's suburban development in a rural area.
Okay.
But there's no definition of a suburban development in a rural area that we can find.
And you've looked at this, have you?
Three houses or five houses or whatever, it's just concerned to a matter of opinion, really.
And who owns the land?
Oh, we own the land ourselves, yeah.
And you want...
My daughter's trying to build on it, yeah.
Just the same story as Sarah's,
it
really.
Is, yeah. And I mean, you know, it's located about 5 kilometres approximately from outside Letterkenny.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's one private dwelling, which would have absolutely no impact whatsoever on the area. And it's been refused at the moment.
And your question is?
What is a suburban development in a rural area, basically?
And
there
also,
is no definition that we can find.
And also, you're asking the question...
And there's only been 2 private dwelling applications in the last 5 years in this area. So, I mean, what's 2 dwellings like? I mean, where are the young people meant to go?
Well, that's the question I was going to ask. I mean, where you're asking this. Where?
To the best of my knowledge, Fianna Fáil made a statement a few years back encouraging family members to stay in the rural areas. Mm. But, I mean, where has that gone?
It's a young couple.
Yeah, are trying to, you know, set themselves out and... on the poverty ladder kind of thing, and they're just being refused. So I would appeal to the powers that be, really, to, you know, someone needs to be accountable and take a stance here. And, I mean, public servants, they should be working on our behalf. Like.
When did they first apply, Veronica, for this permission?
October was the first time, yeah.
And how long before they were told no?
March.
So they waited from October to March?
Yeah. And, I mean, this is their only opportunity. I mean, I have 3 other family members that had to emigrate to Canada and Australia. And this is the one chance for my daughter to stay at home that I can have access to my grandchildren. You know, the usual that happens in a rural area.
Of course, yeah.
Just can't understand it at all. And they're being delayed all the time. And I just feel there's a misinformed decision here by someone within the council. And, you know, it's really difficult even to get... someone to return your call when you make a call into the planning department and within the Donegal County Council.
And you're saying there aren't many houses around you?
There's 5. And they're all on half-acre sites. Like, I mean, I think if you were someone coming along wanting to build 4 or 5 apartments, you would probably get planning. You know, it just doesn't seem... You know, I just feel common sense should prevail here, and this could all be resolved very...
And is it anything to do with the type of property that they're planning to build?
Oh, not at all. So it's a bungalow with a garage or whatever, you know. There's no... Not at all, no. Just a single dwelling.
And was the architect surprised?
Absolutely. Can't understand it at all.
This is 5 kilometres from Letterkenny, fairly rural area.
fairly rural area, yeah.
It's your land.
Yeah.
And you would have expected that your family would have been able to build on that land.
Well, that was my understanding a few years back, where they were encouraging young ones to stay in rural areas. You know, and keep the schools and facilities, whatever, you know, it's just...
And Sarah, your issue is different, but it's similar. In a way, but there are 9 houses built close to you. Was that on your... Yeah, was that on your dad's land too, or not?
No, that's
not. Okay, but the 9 houses are close by, and you say that a number of them, most of them, are holiday homes, you say. And you're wanting to build a house on your father's land for you and your...
The same as that other colour. It's just a small bungalow, so it's not going to be affecting the view or anything like that. There was an issue where they thought it might have affected, so we moved the house back a bit where we would want, so you wouldn't see from the road, and still... There was no...
So what was the issue initially?
They reckon that whenever you were coming around the corner towards where the house would be, you were spoiling the view of the Wild Atlantic Way.
Aha, so the WWW's in here, or the Wild Atlantic, WAW. It's I'm saying WWW because that's what it looks like on the sign. That's the issue, is it?
Well, they've told me numerous of issues, but they haven't actually told me definite why. And he told my architecture to tell the girl not to bother applying, wasting money, because she's not going to get built in. So he said no straight away, without even coming out, without even looking at it.
It's because of where it's located.
Because of where it's located. But that shouldn't be. It's my father's land, and we should be allowed to build. It's not affecting the view, or it's the right restrictions and stuff, which we were trying to comply with.
But they have to have rules there. I mean, there are rules, there are regulations. You know, the planning, there was a mess made, and people were building everywhere and places they shouldn't be building. And, you know, there have to be rules. I mean, that's obvious.
Yeah. But it's also affecting the schools and stuff in the local area. Like, the school I went to now is dwindled down to nothing. And it's putting... teachers out of jobs and stuff. How's the rural schools going to survive if we're not allowed to send our children there, if we're not allowed to live in the area?
You think they want us all in towns, do you?
Yes, I think that's what it is. Why? I do not know.
Veronica, do you think that?
Yeah, well, it kind of sounds like it, all right, Sean. I think we'll just all have to email Owen Murphy and see if he can have any impact on this at all, because, you know, it just seems unbelievable what's happening here in Donegal.
Okay, Sarah and Veronica, thanks both for joining
us. All right, good morning, Sean. Right, thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Bye-bye. It's coming up to 12:45. We need to take a break. We're back just after these. Welcome back. Now, I just want to give a wee mention to the Drumfries Community Defibrillator launch evening being held in the Schliefschnacht Centre tomorrow, Wednesday, at 8 o'clock. Everybody's welcome to come along, and refreshments are going to be provided. So good luck with that. And thanks to Danny Hawkin, by the way, who's the Health and Heritage Coordinator. Thank you for your nice comments as well on my leaving. And I want to thank Maggie, who came up with a lovely little card and gift, and Dimpna and Danny, and this cake that is just to die for. So everybody else will be wanting to get their hands on it. But I might just take it home and be greedy. Why not? Lose weight after. Beth and Alan Thompson of Ballykelly and Willie McGill, hope you enjoy your day on your mystery tour with Kieran and Mary, and great to have you listening. And Mary Maguire, who's celebrating her birthday today, have a good one from your friends. That's to Mary Maguire. And congratulations and welcome home to our niece Nicola O'Donnell of Creevesmith, Letterkenny. Just a few days ago, she finished a trip to the top of Kilimanjaro, imagine, to raise funds for teaching children that don't have access to education, street children in Tanzania, actually. Very proud of you, Nicola. Enjoy your holidays now. Love from Frank and Rose and all the McGettigan Connection. Well done, Nicola O'Donnell. Wonderful achievement there. And I just need to move on, because the Catholic Church say they're not going to allow gluten-free hosts or bread or wafers, as some people call them, for celebrating the Eucharist during Mass. Now, you often hear the priest saying, if anybody's gluten-free, come up to a certain area. So let's find out more, because Fergal O'Sullivan is on the line from the Celiac Society of Ireland. And Fergal, hello to you.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good. Now, you'd often hear the priest say that if anybody's celiac, please come to a particular area, and it comes out of a different place. So what's happening now? What is the church saying about this?
Okay, first of all, I suppose just to give your listeners a bit of a background, celiac disease is an autoimmune condition which affects about 1% of the population, so about 47,500 people in Ireland. And basically it means that they're unable to digest gluten, which is a protein that's found in wheat, barley and rye. And I suppose where the issue comes into play for the communion host is that the Vatican have a directive which says that wheat is the only substance that is authorized by the church to make an acceptable host. Because according to the Vatican, to be a valid host, sufficient gluten must be present to bring about the confection of the bread. Now, what has happened in the past is that they have given a directive on this, which allowed for what we would call gluten-free hosts to be used. And in effect, that this hasn't changed. The article that came out over the weekend was in response to a letter that was written by the Vatican, clarifying their situation, which only got picked up a couple of weeks after it came out. But basically, it mentioned in it that it said that gluten-free hosts were not permitted. But the reality is what the Vatican define as gluten-free would be quite different to what the internationally recognised description of gluten-free would be.
Such as rice or whatever.
Yeah, well, you see, the thing is that there were other situations in other countries where people were producing hosts made from different grains, such as rice or corn, which are completely forbidden, and that isn't the situation that arises here. What happens really is that for something to be designated gluten-free, the internationally recognised limit is that it contains no more than 20 parts per million, and that's what we term gluten-free. So if a host is made with less than 20 parts per million, it is still something that somebody with celiac disease can actually safely consume.
So basically you're saying there's no need to worry about this.
It is the same situation as it was before. The letter was designed to be a clarification of where they're coming from, and I think unfortunately it just created a bit of confusion.
So really it was because people were going to extremes and using rice instead of rice
exactly.
of wafers instead of bread, and that is not permitted, and that never was.
No, and it never was, and the way matters stand at the moment in Ireland is, and anybody who's interested in it can have a look at our own website, which is celiac.ie, and there's a page on that which discusses the whole area, and we've sourced three different suppliers of communion wafers, communion hosts in Ireland, who all supply what are gluten-free hosts, but what the Catholic Church would be happy to call low-gluten, or gluten-free, low-gluten hosts, that are perfectly permissible, perfectly acceptable. And what we would say to people is that if they experience any concerns or difficulties with it, there's a link also on our website to a leaflet that was produced by the Catholic Church in Ireland, which is guidance for the churches on how to actually deal with the matter. And we would encourage people to go onto our site, download that, and maybe bring it along and discuss it with your parish priest just to make sure that there's no confusion about it.
Okay, that's pretty clear, and I appreciate you joining us, and thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Okay, now that's just a bit of clarification there on the gluten-free host. You may have heard the Catholic Church, and it was put down as a big, big headline story, bans gluten-free wafers, and that made celiacs pretty concerned, but it's not quite as simple as that. And in fact, it's nothing to worry about, according to our friend there who's representing the Celiac Society. Now, a very happy birthday to my niece Sarah Jeffrey in Newton on her 13th birthday today, and hope you have a great day, Sarah, from Auntie Carol, Uncle Nigel and Nicole or Nicola. Anyway, and by the way, that was Fergal O'Sullivan. I should have said thank you, Fergal, who was with us. We're coming to the end of the programme, and it's been a busy one and lots of comments. Somebody please explain in plain English how the Fair Deal scheme works. I'm a pensioner living alone. I'm getting more and more worried about my care in later life. Now, I've only just received this comment here, and it may have come in a little bit earlier, but we've had a lot of comments. So maybe it's something we can return to over the next day or so on that one. Lots of giant hogweed along the River Mourne in Strabane, right up along the walk to the swinging bridge in Sy Mills, claims a caller. So it needs to be tackled there as well, says a caller. Does Aina know much about German weed? It's all over the county. Is there any harm in it? Another caller who says, my daughter has tried for planting on our land. She's finding problems in the same way as your earlier callers. Something needs to be done. Okay, that's all we've time for today. Thank you to our producer, who was Kira Johnson, assisted by Caroline Orr, and thank you for your company. And we'll see you tomorrow at 10. Have a lovely day. Slán agus banacht. Bye-bye.